In this episode, we speak with Paul Zhang, the co-founder and leader of technology of Avant, a credit-first financial technology company that provides access to innovative financial solutions, including personal loans and credit cards. Since its founding in 2012, the company has connected almost 3 million customers to $8 billion in loans and 1 million credit cards. Avant has raised over $600 million of equity capital. I'm your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show. If you like the episode, click to follow.
RJ Lumba is the executive chairman of Market Insight Media and the managing partner of GrowthCap. He is the host of Great Entrepreneurs, a podcast for driven entrepreneurs and business owners. Our podcast covers all topics related to the entrepreneurial journey, from ideation to execution to optimization and to reaping the rewards of a well-run business. In the minutes ahead, we'll share with you unique insights and tactics from some of today's most accomplished and inspiring entrepreneurs.
Paul, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today. It's a delight to be with you.
No, of course. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Always excited to talk fintech. And you're in a space that has been around for a long time, but you're taking a different approach to it. Mm-hmm. So tell us how Avant is different than other credit card providers, or how you describe yourself as a fintech company.
Yeah, I would say we are a credit first neobank. That's kind of like one of the ways that we describe ourselves. And the whole thesis behind the company is we're targeting, call it this near prime consumer, right? So the middle class American, maybe not 100% served or satisfied with a big bank, but then also a much better credit quality than someone who's in subprime, right? And so near prime, you know, you would say is maybe somewhere between a FICO score of 580 to 700, 710, maybe something like that. And like really what we started out the business with is the idea that you can use machine learning and advanced data analytics to really provide a better product for this customer segment and then offering a completely digital experience, right? Really kind of like not needing any sort of like physical presence, you can service this customer completely online. And that's kind of like the innovation, right? Where we are able to use a lot of our internal machine learning models in order to really provide a better product, better pricing, better segmentation for this customer segment that traditionally has been underserved.
So how did you identify this need? Was it that you were in the market or you knew of people in the market trying to get a credit card and the terms they got did not suit their credit profile? They had very high APRs,
yeah,
but you know, they had a better profile than that. Is that how it initially started? Like, wait a second, there's a mismatch here, there's a gap.
So our first product was actually the personal loan, and then we added credit card after. So originally, one of my co-founders actually in the market for like a personal loan as a kind of like emergency source of funding for our last startup, actually. But even beyond kind of like that personal need, right? Like I've been in fintech my whole career. So I started out at Innova Financial, which was a subprime provider of credit. And then I also, after that, founded a personal financial management company that focused on folks who are in debt, right? And so I was pretty familiar with the landscape of credit and lending. And we had this personal need, but then also kind of had that institutional or ecosystem knowledge to understand that, hey, you know what, there's actually a pretty big gap in this credit spectrum, this near prime consumer, like targeting this near prime consumer, where, you know, the existing solutions were either too expensive, they were like subprime and not really suited for this customer segment, or they were very old school, right? There was brick and mortar companies that were kind of like serving this customer segment, but they weren't really taking advantage of the innovation that was out there in order to provide a better product, right? And so we definitely understood that the market landscape was there for us. And we thought it was kind of like the opportune time in late 2012 to kind of like start a company like Avant. And that's what we did.
And so it's heavy on the data analytics, you know, machine learning. So is it the case that you have more data and better models where you can appropriately take a certain customer segment and say, we can build products for them, we'll still end up with some net margin?
Yeah.
From this cohort. I guess how much more sophisticated was your technology versus what other existing incumbents could provide?
Yeah, I think like we were one of the first ones to actually use machine learning to build a custom model. Like most of the incumbents, when we first started, for example, were very much business rules driven, right? So they use FICO score and then they looked at, you know, maybe the trade lines on a credit report. They were very much kind of like business rules driven, using FICO as kind of like their roadmap, so to speak. And then most of the incumbents in this space specifically were all brick and mortar, right? So they had that security of like being able to look someone in the eye and be like, I know who you are, right? You're like, you know, someone who's like in the neighborhood maybe. And like, you know, I have no fraud concerns because like, you know, I can like ID you like face to face, right? And so for us, right, like the innovation comes from using machine learning to like build better models where we're not really using like this business rules centric credit model, right? Like we're letting machine learning like dictate kind of like the best model out of like this universe of variables that we're either gathering or feature engineering out of like various data sources. But at the same time, we're also applying machine learning not just to credit risk, but also fraud risk. And that's what made us comfortable doing a digital only product, you know, in a space that's traditionally been very brick and mortar, right? So like we were able to build not just credit models, but also fraud models in order to kind of like minimize our fraud risk. And to your question about additional data sources, right? It's not just additional data sources. We're able to engineer data points out of existing credit reports, right? Like look at them in a different way, right? Like look at different permutations of, hey, which credit providers have you used in the past? And some of those might be significant if they're a certain, call like brand name or a certain financial services entity versus something else, right? And those can become variables that feed into our model. And then we also do take some kind of like alternative data sources that aren't traditionally kind of like in credit reports, like some things that we capture first party, right? For example, you know, maybe like how fast you're going through your application or, you know, your use of capitalization, right? Like those things actually, you know, not a lot of power, but they do contribute to some of the stuff that we look at in our model. And that's kind of like ultimately what allows us to better segment this category with those models.
You've been on quite a journey. You've raised significant sums of capital from some of the top tier investors. What has been the most challenging aspect to date in bringing the company to where it is today?
I would just mention a couple of different things, right? Like I think on a more general basis, it's always been about kind of like hiring, especially early on, hiring the right folks, hiring the right talent, not just from a skill set perspective, but from kind of like a fit perspective, right? Like, and I think like culture fit gets thrown out a lot in startup circles. And I think like it's usually really general. A lot of times it's kind of just like, oh, we didn't like this person, right? And I think like for me, especially early on, it's not just that you're looking for someone who's like skilled and talented in what they're doing, right? Where it's kind of like, you know, you're looking for the best engineers, et cetera. But like at an early startup, a lot of the cultural fit is around their ability to be self-starters, to basically know almost like instinctually, like this is what needs to be done. And because there's just like way too many things happening, right, for someone to be able to be basically like, I'm going to give you a full backlog of things that need to be done. I'm talking a little bit more specifically about technology, but it applies across the entire business. And you're looking for someone who's like really flexible, but also someone who will look for their own work and like has that instinct to know that this is the important things to work on, right? And that's kind of the hard thing to screen for, right? Like you can screen for technical talent, you can screen for background, you can screen for all of these things, but like knowing that someone's going to come in and be a really big self-starter and then internally motivated to like attack the right problem, that's the hard part. And I don't think there's anything that's been a better signal than a referral, right? Someone who you know worked out before or like worked with someone that already works at Avant or at whatever startup, that is just like the best signal. So I think like hiring talent is a big part of the scaling equation or like the challenge. And then for fintech specifically, you know, we've had a couple of different cycles in fintech. You know, there was that unfortunate things that happened in 2016 around peer-to-peer lending. You know, obviously the rate hikes last year, you know, like has hit the industry as well. And I think like part of navigating that is very much about staying disciplined and focused on responsible, right? So like being able to kind of navigate through not just the downturn, but also the hype cycles, right? Like, you know, there's a lot of like times where there's a lot of hype around the industry and there's a lot of capital and there's an inclination to be euphoric and, you know, maybe open up your credit box a little bit, like more than you would have necessarily other times. And really, it's kind of like navigating the highs as well as the lows in order to make sure that your business is growing at a sustainable rate.
So the first part where you talked about hiring and finding the right people, how quickly do you know when someone is not the right fit and not going to work out?
I would say you get a pretty good inclination probably within the first couple months, right? Because I do think part of being a self-starter and knowing what work that needs to be done or the problems that need to be tackled is like, you're kind of a self-starter to like ramp yourself up as well, right? And so it doesn't necessarily mean that someone's figuring it all out themselves, right? But it's more along the lines of like, they know what they don't know. And they're asking the right questions, or they're like almost like sometimes being annoying, asking those questions and like be saying like, hey, I need to understand. I want to understand this. I want to understand that. Right. And I think like that comes out relatively quickly when you're onboarding someone, especially I think like early on when it's early, right. When, you know, you're like 20, 30 folks, it almost doesn't really matter why someone isn't ramping up or not. Like, it's just like, it's kind of like, okay, like you kind of either have to ramp up or you don't, right? And I think like you'll see the folks that are really suited for the environment relatively quickly because they'll know that they need to ramp up to be effective and to tackle the right problems. And that pressure is going to exist internally. And I think like that's what comes out. And I think like that comes from experience in the sense that like, you know, I've had to like manage some folks who haven't been as quick to ramp up. And, you know, maybe outside of like one or two examples where it did work out, most folks, you would say that, okay, maybe it's uncomfortable, but the signals was there like, you know, a couple months into their stint.
A little bit of a controversial question, but how much correlation is there between school and ability to perform on the job?
You mean like what kind of school they went to?
Yeah.
Like, was it like an elite school versus non-elite? I would say there's not that much correlation in the sense that I've had a bunch of folks that I've worked with that, you know, didn't go to the best schools that have been really, really awesome and really, really efficient, you know, solved a ton of problems. I've even had like, you know, some of my best engineers didn't even study engineering in school. Like they were business folks who basically taught themselves engineering as like just like being interested in being entrepreneurial, even though they were pursuing a different degree. I would say that the elite schools do generally produce folks who are very intelligent, very like technically proficient. I would say the floor is kind of higher, but generally I do think that like there are a lot of talent that comes through all sorts of different schools. If I was to say like there's one indicator or factor to like someone who does like work out or who has been very successful is like previous entrepreneurial experience. It doesn't even have to be like anything at scale, right? Like someone who's tried to start a company in college, you know, like maybe it's like 2 to 3 people, right? Especially if it's like technology or like a digital startup and they've had to run the gamut of, I've had to like, you know, wear so many different hats in order to try to get this thing off the ground. Even if they weren't successful, that's been a very good indicator that someone's like, you know, they kind of get the problems at a startup will face. They would be like a tremendous addition to the team.
Got it. What's the best insight or advice that you've received from another founder?
I would say that the best insight or advice I've received is from Paul Graham. I was in Y Combinator in 2011, and he kept on hammering to us that the only thing we should be doing is writing code, building things, and talking to customers, right? And ultimately, for any entrepreneur or startup, that's kind of like the loop that needs to be there, right? Like doing accolades or press or what have you, right? Like those are some of the things that make you feel good in the moment as a founder. But, you know, the core iteration around like writing code, building product, talking to customers, and iterating rapidly and, you know, change direction if something isn't working out, that is the key to entrepreneurial success. And I feel like that's kind of like something that you have to keep in mind no matter what, like, you know, the highs or the lows, right? And that's kind of like how a startup is successful and is successful relative to any sort of incumbents, right? Because like we just have to be able to run faster than anyone else.
I presume that a lot of your product market fit has been established. Of course, you're always innovating on the product. Is the focus now on marketing and kind of really getting the word out about your product so you can capture more of this near prime segment?
Marketing is definitely a big part of kind of like capturing more market share, right? Like in terms of direct marketing or affiliate marketing or what have you. I would say that the product market fit has been found, but ultimately credit in of itself is kind of like a shifting environment, right? Like there's competitors out in the market and you're competing directly with them on terms that are very widely available, right? Like a lot of folks shop on APR or you know, dollar amount of their loan or credit line, right? And so there's constantly a need to innovate your product construct in terms of those factors. And at the same time, that means that you have to constantly also innovate your credit model, right? Like, so there's additional data sources or even population shifts in terms of like behavior that occur. For example, like, right, a consumer behaves really, really differently during COVID than pre-pandemic and now post-pandemic, right? And so like a model that you built pre-pandemic is not going to really work for you now that folks are coming out of that period. Like a lot of the data that you're collected during the COVID period, maybe that's not like quite so applicable to the post-pandemic period. So I would say that there is still a lot of things that you need to do on the data science and the credit side. And so like it really is a more consistent need to innovate across all the segments of the business. Another example on the credit side is, you know, like there's been a proliferation of kind of like non-traditional credit data, right? You think about your Plaids, your income data, or your bank statements, potentially employment data, right? Like those are now getting fed into models, and that potentially is an even bigger universe expansion from a kind of like a volume perspective than just trying to acquire more market share, right? Because like now you can say yes to like a different type of person than a customer that you might have said no to previously because they lacked credit history, but they're like, you know, income data is so much more like rich, right? And able to power your decisions. So like I would say it's generally across the board, not just marketing focused, even having a more mature company, quote unquote.
Got it. Final two questions. One is, could you tell us about a person who has had a profound influence on you?
Yeah, I would say my dad, right? Like I think as an immigrant, I've thought long and hard about kind of like the journey that they had to make in terms of like leaving their entire life and support network behind, coming to a new country with really no safety net whatsoever to try to pursue a better life and completely new language with a small child, right? Like as a new dad myself, it's kind of like those kind of factors just like seem very, very challenging to think about. And that is something that is pretty inspiring to me.
Excellent. Last question. Can you tell us about a charity cause or other endeavor that you're passionate about?
Yeah, I'm pretty passionate about AAPI causes just generally. I'm a member of Gold House, and I also participate as a judge slash mentor in the Gold House Ventures Accelerator. And so helping mentor the next generation of AAPI founders is something that I'm pretty passionate about. And I think like it's really important to try to kind of like create that spirit of entrepreneurship in Asian American Pacific Islander community. And I'm also pretty passionate about like the startup scene in Chicago in general. And I participate in an angel group here as well as work pretty closely with my alma mater, University of Illinois, in terms of their startup and venture accelerator programs. So yeah, I think like I'm pretty passionate about those two things in like AAPI startup founders, as well as just kind of like the Chicago Midwest startup scene in general.
Awesome. Paul, I want to thank you again for taking the time to chat with us today. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you, RJ. Awesome to chat with you as well.